It is December 7th, 2016, and this is episode number 388 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am in love. To get the full story, I know. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com.
And just make sure that whatever notes you send us are attached to Cupid's arrow. Mostly just sent, for Brian.
Sent, they could be sent via Cupid's arrow.
That's right.
Well, you're in love too.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And not to me. I mean, some people may have assumed, right, that when I said I was in love, that it was with you. And that they may have assumed that you therefore love me back too, because some people do think that we have a thing going on.
Yeah, some people do think that, and I bet the fanfic is amazing. But to be clear, I love you, but I'm not in love with you.
Yes, and I love you, Jeff. I'm not in love with you. I have written some fanfic though. That's probably a topic for another show altogether.
No. I think we have our topics for today. I'll do the illustrations.
Shall I read from some of my fanfic?
Yes.
That is not at all appropriate, Jeff. This is a serious show.
Really?
This is a serious show, sir.
Yeah. Well, really? Hey, did you ever notice that when I do the introduction line, the introduction bit right before you talk and uh-huh. tell me your title of the day,
uh-huh.
I always do that in a single breath?
Yes. No, I've never noticed that. Not once. Yeah. I will from now on.
Now you will. And now all the listeners are going to go back and listen, and they'll find a couple where I did have to use two breaths, but that's because I was having allergy problems.
I knock on the door, though I'm not sure I need to. My heart is pounding loud enough for everyone in a 2-mile radius to hear. Okay. All right.
Stop. When do you get to the erotic part? That's what I'm waiting for.
Boy, I hope our listeners love us. You know, actually, let's do right there. Let's cut to some listener mail, because you've actually been gone quite a bit in the last, I don't know, what, 5 weeks, 4 weeks?
Yeah, like in the last 4 weeks. I went on a long overdue vacation with my girlfriend, and that was really, really nice. Sorry you guys couldn't be with us.
This would be the woman you actually are in love with.
Yes, that would be the very one. And then I was kind of conference hopping after that. So I was a busy guy, which means that you had to do the show a few times without me.
Right. And John Keat, the devil's advocate, was kind enough to step in.
Right. And I hear that he is so much like me, just always laid back, gets along with everyone, and is always looking for the positive in everything.
Yeah, you clearly have not met Mr. Keat, which is funny because I happen to know that you have actually met Mr. Keat.
Yeah.
Of course, when you meet John Keat in person, he's nothing like, right? He's sweet and cuddly and nice, and you know, it's charming and generous. And,
he is. He's a really nice guy with a heart of gold.
Yeah, and then but he goes on these rants, and so listen, folks, people tend to either love or hate John, especially when he gets in ranty mode. We actually got a lot of feedback. It was about 60-40 pro against John.
And it wouldn't surprise me if John is actually disappointed to hear that 60% of the people really liked him, and that it wasn't 60% of the people really hated him.
He was super cranky that so many people agreed with him. He was super. It was so funny. He's such a funny guy. G Gunn wrote to us just this morning, and he said, "Please don't have John Keat, aka Marvin the Paranoid Android, on ACM again." that's great. I love that. On ACM again, ever. I found his negative, non-fact, closed-minded, and abusive.
Go ahead.
and abusive comments to be very insulting to not only Brian, but also the listeners, or at least one to me. If I really want to hear a continual rant against all things Apple and their management with only highly subjective justification, I'd be listening to the actual Paranoid Android podcasts. I get that. And I and very much appreciate that feedback. You know, so like, here's what...
Is this a good time to let everyone know I'm in a really foul mood and I'm angry at everything today?
Yes.
I'm sure you can just hear it in my voice.
Yes. This would be a great time to mention that.
I'm not in a bad mood.
On Twitter, at Piper MacBear said... the parts where you guys stopped the podcast to have a Peter Griffin versus Giant Chicken knockdown drag out were well edited out. He also said on Twitter, that NYC guy on your show last show, episode 387, whew, that was one angry man. Yes. Yes, he is. Sometimes. Again, fascinating because he's so charming. And I'm looking for another, we got another Twitter on comment, another comment on Twitter. Neil said, oh my God, John is so right. And what an epic rant on this week's show. More please. And we got a couple of very positive comments in, an email also, but then we also got another complaint. I'm looking for that other complaint right now. Rick Allen, a longtime fan of the show, super kind, has written in quite a bit.
Hi, Rick.
Said, once again, thanks for a great show. I love the points about advertising, yet I've not seen any of the ads. He talked about Apple's failure to scale. Anyway, he enjoyed our comments.
I'm going to interrupt for just a second because yes? I wasn't actually here to throw my two cents in on how I feel about Apple's ads. Uh-huh. They give me all the feels. I really like them.
I think they're great. I think just John's wrong. Dane Hansen, though, wrote in and said, I strongly agree with John Keat about Apple's lack of direction with some more things. So, I mean, anyway, the point is that John generates a strong reaction. I like being challenged. I think that John has a tremendous intellect. He's extremely intelligent. He worked in Next before Next was bought by Apple.
That makes sense because if he worked at Next after it was bought by Apple, he would have been working for Apple.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's got a lot of perspective. And he challenges me, even when I strongly disagree with him, which is all the frickin' time. I like the way that he challenged. I find it challenging to be challenged. How's that?
I like that.
So I mean, you know, we don't bring him on just because he can be obnoxious. We bring him on because. Actually, I think he brings a lot to the discussion. And you and I tend to agree on a lot of things.
But when we disagree, it's really clear that you're wrong.
What are things that are untrue? I'll take things people say for 1,000, Alex.
Just not things Jeff says.
Yeah. So anyway, we appreciate the feedback. We got lots more than we normally get from John. So, you know, there's something there.
There's something there. And Brian, just so you know, I don't think any less of you when you're sticking to your guns and you're so wrong. I admire your tenacity.
That's very kind of you.
Well, you know,
you will be a gentle overlord.
Oh, yes. I'm going to be a benevolent dictator.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to let you have your own island.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
Yeah.
And, I appreciate that.
Yeah. And it can be as big as you want. What you choose which island you want. And it's yours.
All right. Great. Thanks. You're the best. All right. Let's actually then talk about you have received... right before you left on this last trip last week, you received your MacBook Pro with Touch Bar.
Yes. And
and somehow you haven't yet talked about it on a podcast.
Well, that's because, I talked about it very briefly, I think, on Daily Observations, maybe yesterday. No, I think you're right. I don't think I've talked about this on a podcast yet. So I got my MacBook Pro like the day before I had to take off again for a conference. Mm-hmm. So I migrated everything over from my old computer onto this one, and off I went. And what I did as a backup, because I didn't know if this computer was going to fail spectacularly for me or what could possibly go wrong. So I threw my iPad Pro into my bag as a backup computer. Mm. And the idea for me was it stays in my bag unless I absolutely have to give up on the MacBook Pro for some reason.
Sure.
And the iPad Pro stayed in my bag the whole trip.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I did not need to use my iPad
Pro. How did you not need... Oh, I'm sorry. You didn't have to use your iPad Pro. MacBook Pro.
I used my MacBook Pro the whole time.
Gotcha.
And,
That makes sense. It's the new thing. You're going to be more inclined to use that than you might normally have been.
Right. And I really wanted to try it in scenarios where I could set myself up for failure, because that's a really good way to find what's going to break. And you know me, I rush in where angels fear to tread, and I figure that I'm going to break things for me so they don't have to break for other people. Here's what I found. I really like it a lot, and I think the Touch Bar is great.
All right. Great. Great to have that discussion.
Yeah. All right. So before I got the computer, I was concerned that the Touch Bar was going to be too narrow. Because when you look at all the photos, it looks like the buttons on the Touch Bar are really tiny. And so I was like really concerned that they were going to be too small a target to really hit with your finger. And it turns out I was completely wrong. It's like they're the perfect size, at least for my hands. And I love that you get the contextual section for apps that are Touch Bar aware. So here's an example. When I played the intro music for the show today, I had a sound wave going across the Touch Bar with a playhead point. So if I had needed to move back or forth through the track, I could have done that right on the track bar or Touch Bar. Now, granted, I wasn't going to because we were playing the song.
Right.
But the fact that I have that easy to use scrub tool built into audio apps now
is
great.
Yeah, that is here is my question about using the Touch Bar like that, because it's one thing to be pressing a contextual button. In other words, just pressing a spot. Mm-hmm. I don't have a Touch Bar yet. Mm-hmm. Although I am, frankly, much more likely to go back to a MacBook Pro for my next portable. Anyway, that's not the point. Is the Touch Bar wide enough to make doing things like scrubbing truly smooth and easy?
For the files that I have been using, yes. Now, granted, I'm not trying to scrub through, say, like an hour-long audio track. I'm scrubbing through something that's a few minutes or a few seconds long. And it's totally fine for that. I find that it's much easier and I have better precision with positioning the playhead when I'm using my finger on the Touch Bar. So that was a real pleasant surprise.
That's interesting. Okay, well, that's also good to know. Now, how often do you find yourself actually looking at what those keys are? Because I mean, that's one aspect of a contextual set of keys is that you don't know what they are unless you're looking at them. And normally for touch typists in particular, and you and I are both touch typists, right? Touch typing is technically a specific method of touching without typing without looking?
Yeah, that's how I was taught.
Yeah, I'm self-taught, but I don't look when I type. But I guess I probably shouldn't call myself a touch typist because I have no idea what the actual method of.
But you're not doing the hunt and peck thing. You don't have to look at the keyboard.
I don't have to look at the keyboard. Yeah. All right. So mostly pedantic. But so as people who don't look at their keyboards while they're typing, the notion of having to look down at the touch bar to know what's there, you're actually pulling your eyes away from the screen and down to your keyboard. Mm-hmm. So how does that affect you in a practical manner?
So far, it hasn't been a big deal. But, you know, I haven't had a ton of time to really use this. And there are many apps that aren't offering touch bar support yet. So what I'm finding is that I look at the touch bar a lot because
the function keys.
Yeah, to see what function keys are there, what contextual keys are there, because each app, it's a new thing for me.
Yeah, but you'd still have to be
if I had regular function keys there, I would be looking at them anyhow because that's what I did before.
Well, you just really wouldn't be using them. That's what you did before.
No, I was using them some, and honestly, though, rarely, I was using though. Them as the system function keys. Like I would need to adjust volume on something, and you know things like that.
You're right, that's because Apple repurposed the function keys. I don't even know what to call those. Mostly pedantic, though.
Yeah, so Apple repurposed the function keys to be, I call them system keys.
Right.
So we'll go with that because...
Yeah, fair enough. And I use those all the time, too. I do volume adjustment in particular and brightness adjustment. And then I don't personally use my... And I'm looking, by the way, I'm looking at the wired aluminum Apple keyboard. Mm-hmm. So I don't normally use the play button or next button for iTunes controls, but I do use volume up, volume down, mute, and brightness down and brightness up. I use those five buttons and the escape key all the time, every day, multiple times throughout the day.
Yep. Okay. So we're pretty similar with those keys.
Right.
I use the escape key a lot. That's not a problem. I have not been bothered by the fact that the escape key is a virtual button.
Okay.
It is not an issue for me. I prefer adjusting the volume on the touch bar now because when you tap the volume button, you get a slider and that just feels a lot more natural to me for adjusting volume.
Fair enough. But I use those five keys without looking and I use
those keys most of the time. So for me, it's not a big change.
Without looking, and I tap them still without looking. So if I'm going to go volume, as a matter of fact, I actually like, so the way, and I don't know how much of this is just me adopting to the workflow that Apple's giving me, right? But if I'm going to adjust my volume, I'm looking at the on-screen visual cue that tells me how many pips I've done.
I'm doing that too.
And then I'm listening for the number of pips that I'm changing the volume. Okay. But I'm not looking at my keyboard at any given time. Same thing with the brightness key. I might look at the on-screen indication of, like right now, for instance, it's at max brightness. I must have hit it by mistake. So now I like to keep it one below that for whatever reason. And
because you're our special princess.
Exactly. I am our special high-maintenance princess. And again, I'm tapping those buttons without looking at them. And it seems like the touch bar would change that.
Okay. The big change for me there is that instead of going tap, 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 tap to adjust my brightness or my volume, mm-hmm. I'm now going tap, slide, tap, slide. So I'm still watching the on-screen
I would
indicator.
Adjust. Yeah.
But I'm sliding with my finger on the touch bar.
You're not watching the virtual slider on the touch bar?
No, the first couple times I did, but no, once I got used to how it works, I do exactly what I did before. I had a touch bar, which is I look to see where the function key is because for some reason I always had to do that.
Yeah.
Tap, and I know where the slider bar is, and so then I'm just
sliding. Oh, right. I don't have to use the function on the wired keyboard. I don't have to use the function key. I've got dedicated buttons. All right. So now what happens if you're in an app and you don't have the volume control?
Ah, but you do, because you have this little strip that sits off to the right side of the touch bar.
Yeah.
So you have most of the touch bar is available for whatever app you're in, but you also have this piece over at the end where you get like one of the little carrot arrow things that signifies tap this to slide something out. And so you can tap that and all those other controls slide back out for you. So you don't lose those
so buttons. So the system level controls are one tap away, even in another app. Is that what you're telling me?
Yep.
I hadn't realized that.
Yeah. It's
that's cool.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. And the fact that you can customize which buttons are in that strip is great for me. So one thing that I learned after playing with Siri on my Mac is that I don't use Siri on my Mac. So I took the Siri button off that strip and I put the screen capture button there instead. And it's pretty cool because when you tap the screen capture button, now instead of having to do Command-Shift-3, Command-Shift-4, and then space, or whatever combo you're doing to get the specific type of screen capture you want, you tap the button for the camera, and then you have the buttons for, I want to capture the screen, I want to capture a region, or I want to capture a window. And it remembers what you did last. So I always capture windows. That's already highlighted. And then there's another button that you can tap and choose a destination for that image file. So if you typically have your images going to one place for screen captures, but for this particular instance, you need to send it somewhere else, no problem. You can do that right from the touch bar.
Nice. Now, and my purpose here was to not only get my own questions answered because, you know, I'm greedy like that. I was kind of hoping that to matching my ignorance with your experience would help people who are, you know, still on the fence or still curious about the touch bar.
And I think that's exactly how this is playing out.
Well, certainly hope so.
So one thing I found is that little strip, control strip in the touch bar, you can customize it by adding in like another app. That's, I'll call it a touch bar app or control strip app.
Okay.
So you can add other functionality into that bar that's not going to be there by default as part of the system or as part of one of the touch bar aware apps. So what I did was I went and found a little app that adds in an application picker. So, you know, the control tab thing or command tab thing that we do?
Yeah, which I'm very comfortable doing.
Yeah, which I'm very comfortable doing.
I use that probably 50 times a day, maybe 100.
Oh, yeah. And I use it so much, too. And I use it all the time, even still. But now I have this app that when I tap it, it just slides out all the apps that I have open. So I could tap an app from there. Sometimes that has proven to actually be useful for me. And it's just pretty cool because it works, but it is kind of neat to see all of my app icons just lined up across that bar. So if I'm doing something and I want to switch to an app that's like 2/3 of the way down the list.
Yeah.
Instead of going command tap, 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 tap.
Yeah.
I just go tap, tap, and I'm done.
Well, fair enough. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. I kind of would rather be able to do that without looking, though. I say that, and I haven't actually done this yet.
You know, the hang-up you're having with having to look at the touch bar is a hang-up that I had before I got it. And after I got it, I found that the looking at the touch bar thing isn't as big a deal for me as I thought it was going to be. And it's because instead of having to stop, move your head, focus on the touch bar, all you have to do is aim your eyes down and look real quick. Because the buttons are bright, they're really high resolution, and it's easy to pick out what's there. So I found that instead of taking my face and moving it so I'm not aimed at the screen, I'm still facing the screen. I just look down with my eyes real quick, and it's turned out to be a really fast way for me to access controls.
All right.
So, yeah, I came into the Touch Bar thing very skeptical, and here we are days later, and I'm finding that the Touch Bar, for me, is actually a useful tool. Do you want to hear my one problem I'm having, though?
Yes.
Okay, here's my one problem. I have lost the ability to use Touch ID.
Okay. Explain.
So, okay, here's the deal. You have the button that's at the right edge of the Touch Bar, and it's your power button, and it's your Touch ID sensor. So when you set up your computer, you go through the whole, put your finger on it, all the different ways, just like you do on your iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's done, you're set up. And so you have Apple Pay, and you can authenticate with your fingerprint. And it worked perfectly for me all the way up until yesterday, when my computer is acting like I don't have Touch ID at all. And I haven't been able to figure out what happened. So I'll troubleshoot that and let people know what the fix was.
Surely that will be an issue of... You know what? I love this Focusrite Scarlett 212, 2i2, my audio interface.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's just a really good piece of equipment. I'm saying that because just now I was able to adjust my self-monitoring. It's not software monitoring, it's hardware monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to adjust that just so incredibly easily while we were talking. Yeah. So anyway, it's a great. So it's a very, very good audio interface. If you're in the market for an audio interface, you should look at the Scarlett line from Focusrite, and the 212 is they make a one input audio interface in the Scarlett line. I wanted a two input. Interface for recording instruments and mm-hmm. like being able to record two things at once, obviously, like, you know, voice and guitar, for instance. So that's why I got the two. But anyway, it's just it's a really good piece of equipment.
That's cool. I'm glad you have it on many levels, not the least of which is I don't have to tell you almost every time we start a call that you need to restart your audio interface.
But it wasn't, that was the problem, is that it wasn't every time. It was random.
It was a lot of times.
It was a lot of times, but it wasn't, there was no, anyway. So surely your Touch ID problem is simply a matter of resetting it.
Yeah. Yeah. My assumption is I just need to shut off Touch ID and start as if it's a brand new.
Yeah.
And re-enter my fingerprint and it'll be fine again. So I'm assuming it's just a weird software bug, and a future Mac OS update will fix it.
Do you want to like do it right now, live on the air?
Do you want me to? I can.
Yeah.
But oh, why not? By the way, that app that I'm using, it's called, yes, Touch Switcher.
And is it on the Mac App Store or is it downloadable?
It's a free download thing. If you we'll make sure there's a link in the show notes. But if you Google Touch Switcher, looking for one word, you'll find
Touch. Just Touch Switcher?
Uh-huh.
Touch Switch. Go ahead. Do your thing.
I'm doing my thing.
While I'm looking. Touch Switch or Switcher?
Touch Switcher.
Switcher, yeah. I'm not finding it. I'm finding sensors.
That's interesting.
Is it, say, Mac app? Go ahead. Did you start already?
Yeah. And
is it perhaps Touch Switch on the App Store by Gotella?
When I picked it up, I downloaded it from the website for the developer.
Yeah, why haven't we done a cool stuff found on this?
We may have.
Yeah, I don't think we have, so why don't you do that?
Yeah, well.
Sausage, people, sausage.
Maybe I will do it.
It's from Hazeover. Does that ring a bell?
That sounds like it.
Yeah, Touch Switcher for Touch Bar. All right, we will have a link in the show notes. I am putting that information together right now while Jeff resets his Touch ID.
I couldn't actually reset Touch ID. It doesn't let you disable it.
Can't.
So I'm really re-adding my fingerprint. done. Oh. Oh, I see what happened. It lost my fingerprint.
Huh. I wonder how it did that.
I don't know, but that, okay. Because now that, okay, here's what I did. I went into System Preferences. I went to Touch ID. And what I was going to do was remove my fingerprint.
Yeah.
And there was a button that said add a fingerprint. Yeah. And it said use Touch ID for, and it says unlocking your Mac, Apple Pay, iTunes, and right. Apple Store. Those options are grayed out. I'm like, okay, it's because I've turned it on already. So I click add a fingerprint. I put my fingerprint in. Now that it's done, I have a thing that says finger one in the settings. So it blasted my fingerprint out and it was just gone. So no wonder it stopped working. It's because it ate my fingerprint.
Yeah, that's not useful. But I mean, I'm sorry, the knowledge that you just gave us is useful. The thing that happened to you is less useful.
Right.
And by less, I mean not.
Yeah, it's completely the opposite of useful. So it is
unuseful.
All right, so now here's another tip for everyone. Now that my finger is in there, it's tagged finger one. So I double-clicked on the title for that, and it highlighted so I can change it. And I am giving it an appropriate name. There we go. Okay, so you can rename your fingerprints just like you can on your iPhone, but on the Mac, you just double-click on the label for the fingerprint. There you go.
Very cool.
All right, so I believe I have Touch ID working again.
Yay! And
I've now labeled my fingerprint.
Live in front of our listeners.
Live in front of a studio audience.
Yes.
Yay!
All right, there we go.
If we were still mixing this on in post-production, I would have added in some audience sound effects right there.
It's okay. Your attempt at being an audience in that moment.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Oh, I was going to say everyone probably totally believed it.
So listen, Jean-Louis Gasson wrote a great piece.
You know, I'm totally getting now why he won't answer your correspondence. It's really clear to me now.
Jean-Louis Gassier was the tech exec who may have given John Sculley the strength to demote Steve Jobs back in the day. He supported Steve's ouster as head of the Mac. And being in charge of new products and things like that.
Okay.
That's right. And so he's been vilified by some, and he was a hero to others, and he wore leather pants, and he was he was like the hot, sexy tech exec for a long time.
I really like that your description of who he was as an employee included he wore leather pants.
Because he wore leather pants. Come on, man. That's like really awesome. This is back in the 90s. He wore leather pants in the late 80s. He wore leather. I mean, like, who does that? Rock stars.
I've never even owned leather pants.
Rock stars did that. Right. I've never even owned any either. And I'm a wannabe rock star.
Now, I was in a play once where the lead woman opposite me, she wore leather pants.
Well, that's pretty cool. They look good.
Yeah. Yeah. They looked really nice.
That's nice.
Yeah. Anyhow, you're talking about Jean-Louis Gasset.
Jean-Louis Gasset. Yes. He regularly writes about technology and Apple. And I usually very much enjoy his insight. And he wrote a piece that sort of got me thinking. Would it have been on Monday? I think it was for Monday's note. And it's a really good piece. I'll have a link to my coverage in the show notes. And there's a link there to his piece. And, I included some quotes that I thought were interesting. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is interesting because it includes some lore and a lot of background information about.
What would have been awesome is if you'd said that as it had some lore and a little bit of data.
I'm just not as cool as you.
No, but if you keep trying, Brian, maybe someday.
Maybe someday. He had There was a little anecdote about, see, at the time, this is a quote, at the time that Apple's smartphone project began, an Apple employee and former B engineer offered Palm Incorporated $800,000 for a BOS code dump. One of Jean-Louis Gasset's projects after Apple was a little company called B, where they were doing their own hardware and own software.
Did you ever get one of the versions of BOS?
I did have BOS.
I installed it on my Mac.
I did too.
And I loved it, even though it was completely useless because they hadn't built like a printing subsystem or anything yet.
Right. Yeah, it was a, you know, sort of a big giant beta project.
Yeah.
But it was a long time.
Still kind of cool. Anyhow.
But Apple almost bought B instead of Next.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that obviously isn't what happened. Apple did end up buying Next instead, and Steve Jobs came back, and Jean-Louis Gasset did not. And but anyway, apparently Apple offered $800,000 for just a copy of BOS, and this was to Palm Incorporated, and this would have been in roughly 2003 or 4, I'm guessing.
Okay. So and well, after we'd made the transition to OS X. But
yes.
Before iOS.
As a matter of fact, he specifically describes how Palm refused the $800,000 for BOS.
They should have taken it because that would have been the most money they ever got off of it.
It's true. And although, actually, WebOS, which is
Palm OS,
which is not BOS, actually. So
correct.
Yeah, WebOS is still being used, which is interesting. Anyway,
yeah, but that's because HP said, hey, open source.
Right. Okay, fair enough. And Palm refused that money, and Scott Forstall ended up talking Steve into letting him do a strip down OS X for what would become iOS. Right.
Which, in the end, I think was the right choice.
Yeah. It was in yes. I completely agree. And so it includes all that information, and that's really interesting. But then he had a little anecdote at the end, and I'm going to quote again. A couple of friends of mine, unknown to each other, posited a scenario in which we carry our smartphone around with us, and then when we reach our office or home desk, plunk it down next to a large screen and keyboard plus trackpad combo.
Mm-hmm.
The mobile device connects wirelessly, and presto, the comforts of desktop computing. Surely they both said this is just a matter of software and time. Now, first of all, it's an interesting idea. Mm-hmm. But it made me think about an interview that I read from Steve Jobs from back in the mid-90s. And I have looked for this interview has stuck with me. I have looked for that original interview many times. I've never been able to find it. My assumption is that whatever publication put it out went under, because I'm sure they'd want to have it in their archives for you know, people looking for Steve Jobs interviews.
Sure, makes sense.
Never been able to find it since. And I started looking, like, it's one of those things where, you know, I read it and I remembered it and I wrote about it a long time ago. And didn't think about saving it because, you know, I could always just go and get it again.
Of course, because
the internet, right. And
did you try the Wayback Machine?
Yeah, I've tried everything, man. I can't find it. If someone remembers this interview and can point me to it again, I would love to read it again. Steve Jobs was talking about the magic of going to, you know, like logging into his Next box at work and having his desktop, and then going home and logging into his Next box and having his desktop.
Mm-hmm.
So like wherever he went, of course, wherever he went and had a ton of bandwidth and just happened to have a Next box sitting around, he would be able to log in and get his quote unquote desktop. Mm-hmm. And, you know, be using his stuff wherever he was. And that was always incredibly compelling to me. Except for what it means is that the desktop is being served remote. Sure. And this is sort of at the heart of what is still called the thin client.
Mm-hmm.
where you've got lightweight machines in front of you and they're accessing heavyweight servers that are doing most of the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is that there are some things that are just a lot faster when they're local.
Yeah, and see, I think where Steve was going with that was a hybrid model where you have a heavy lifting machine locally, but then you also have a heavy lifter on the back end, so the cloud thing.
Well, and yeah, Nextboxes were certainly heavy lifters for in their day.
Yes, well, without them, we would not have the World Wide Web. At least it wouldn't have come about in the form that it did at the time it did.
Sure. Sure. And at the heart of what Steve was talking about is simply Unix and Linux by extension, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, with Unix, you log into your account and you have your account. It's just there's a difference between logging in via a command line and actually getting your, like, booting up with your desktop and having your GUI in front of you.
Right.
But I always thought this was like super, super interesting. And I think I wrote a piece, like this would have been in 2002, 2003, so a long time ago. I think I wrote a piece about how, you know, Apple might not do a cell phone or a PDA until we can have things like, printable screens. Mm-hmm. Like OLED, right? Back when OLED was sort of in the proof of concept stage. Just the notion that we could have carry a roll with this is what I was thinking at the time, and then you pull it out and there's your screen, and so you could do desktop computing wherever you wanted. And you know, obviously that didn't happen. We ended up getting the iPhone. We ended up getting the iPad. Mm-hmm. The iPhone was already a thing at the time when I was writing. I'm sorry. The iPod was already a thing at that time. And
right,
but. There's no way. Steve was speaking so passionately about this in this interview, about the wonders of having your desktop with you. There's just no way, in my opinion, that this concept is not still alive somewhere within Apple.
Well, if you look at some of the things we're seeing with iCloud today and macOS Sierra.
Yeah.
They're touching on that. You know, like having your desktop everywhere thing. Mm. That's kind of, I mean, that's going down that path because you have your files in the cloud, you have the same desktop showing up on multiple machines. I'm going to make the interns oil that thing, and you're not going to like it.
I don't like what you're saying, because I think we can do better.
Well, okay. Now bear with me, Mr. Whiny Pants. We're in the early stages. This is a thing that while Steve Jobs was envisioning this decades ago, we're finally at a point where we're seeing pieces of it coming to life.
I think we can do better.
What? Holy crap, man. We're at the beginning part. Of course we can do better.
No, but I think there's an entirely different concept waiting.
And and it may very well be, but Apple takes us by the hand and they take us down a path into new technology.
Yeah, but I don't think iCloud has anything to do with this.
You're totally hooking on to the wrong part here. You need to hook on to the desktop everywhere part.
That's where you're getting it wrong.
And what I'm saying is that's the first step. Nah. This is where Apple's taking us by the hand.
But it's not a desktop. The stuff in the browser is not a desktop. The stuff in the browser is access to some apps, and they're cloud apps, and they're web-based apps.
We are so totally not talking about the same thing at all. You are completely not with me here. So Brian, okay, Apple has this thing now where an iCloud is being used as part of it, but it's not the thing where you have the browser, where you have your apps that are in the browser, you know, like Keynote and Pages and all that. This is the thing where you sit down at one Mac and you have your desktop, and it's your desktop on your computer. And then you go to your other computer and turn it on, and it's the same desktop because iCloud in the background is synchronizing everything so it matches up. It's the same files in the same place on both machines. That's what I'm talking about. And that's the first step that I'm talking about in getting us to the vision that Steve had. The whole thing with the web apps, no. That's
just okay. Fine. You're right. I was misunderstanding what you're saying. But that's still not the, I think there's still a better idea even than that.
Of course. And this is just the first step. We have to start down the path to get to that better place. And Apple's taking us down the path one step at a time, and this okay. is their first step down that path. I think
it's not a step down that path. It's a stopgap, because what would be better is if we have what I'm calling the reverse toaster fridge, and the thing is that this is in keeping with Tim Cook in particular denigrating the toaster fridges.
Now, your reverse toaster fridge, to me, works only if we have a unified operating system for our iPhone or iPad.
No. It's the other way around. It's totally the other way around. What if one device could serve up the separate operating system that you need for that task? So let's just call it an iPhone for the lack of any other name. You've got your iPhone. You pull out your iPhone. You use your iPhone. You're using iOS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but now imagine a future where OS X, or Mac OS as it's called now, has been ported to ARM, that the processors in your iPhone are powerful enough to be able to run Mac OS, mm-hmm. and the storage is big enough to hold Mac OS and all your stuff.
Okay.
And you pull out your iPhone and you take a phone call, it's iOS. You pull out your iPhone, you do iMessages, it's iOS. You pull out your iPhone, you pull up the mail client, it's iOS. Browser, iOS. Apps, iOS. Now you get to your office or your home and you set your iPhone down by the display, the large display you have, and the keyboard that you have, and the trackpad that you have. And now your iPhone starts running OS X and pushing OS X out to that display into that keyboard. Except for all of your files are still on the same device. Your apps are on the same device, but it's not serving out a unified operating system. That's what Microsoft is doing. And yes. Apple has been very clear in denigrating that solution. Apple has been very clear about not denigrating the need for people to have one device that does stuff, but denigrating Microsoft's approach to solving that problem, which is to have one operating system sit both in the mobile world and in the desktop world.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I don't think they've come up with an elegant solution.
Not at all. But Apple has consistently not only denigrated that, but also consistently said that the devices should be true to their own form, should be true to their own purpose. So a mobile device, a touchscreen device, should be a touchscreen device. And a desktop computer should be a desktop computer. I think that the touch bar is Apple, and we've talked about this, is Apple doubling down on the fact that you shouldn't have toaster fridges, that that you don't want to reach out and touch your iMac screen, or even reach out and touch your MacBook Pro screen. Mm-hmm. Now, some people disagree with that, and that's fine. But I think this is Apple's doubling down on that notion. Well, now, cut to 5 years from now, or maybe 10 years from now, but probably closer to five. And now imagine that your iPhone could serve both Mac OS and iOS and have all your files with you, so that you're not logging into your screen wherever you go. You're actually taking your screen with you wherever you go. Mm-hmm. Except for the device is powerful enough to be able to serve both operating systems and be able to allow your circumstances to be true to their need.
You know, on one hand, I like the idea, but on the other hand, it really scares me, because the path that I see that becoming is the path where you have a single operating system, but you get the interface for the type of device you're on, and that feels like the kludgy Microsoft way.
No, but I Yeah, and I don't think Apple would do that. I think iOS separate and iOS separate, but being able to serve that from two devices would be incredibly freeing. It'd be very, very powerful, and I think it would give Apple a huge advantage. And this also, by the way, is in keeping with Apple's entire thing about keeping your data on your device, mm-hmm. and keeping everything private, like keeping Siri data on your device, keeping the machine learning on your device, keeping your files on your, although actually we do have iCloud storage. Mm. So Apple is sort of departing from things there, but being able to take our desktop with us and have it also be our phone would to me is in keeping with this idea that the best way to protect our data from the bad guys is to keep it local.
You know, I really like the keep it local idea, and I like that a lot. And I went to see Apple come up with an elegant way to address that, and the reverse toaster fridge might be the way, or it might be that we have a device that's our phone, but it's also a file server. And so our files are always with us, and then it just seamlessly serves up whatever content we need to whatever other device we're using.
Yeah.
Apple comes up with, it's probably going to be pretty elegant. My guess is they've been thinking about this for a long time because Steve was talking about it decades ago.
Yeah, and so I want to get back to that point. There's no way that this idea just died. Like Steve was like really keen on it, and then he just buried it. There's just no way. It has to be cooked. This has to be somewhere in Apple's labs, a point towards which Apple is working. And we're not, from a technology standpoint, we're not there. Actually, I would assume that Apple also has in its labs a version of macOS that runs on ARM processors.
Of course they do. And I say that not because I know, but I don't have insider information, but of course they do. Of course they're doing that. Just like they had macOS running on Intel processors back when they were moving over from PowerPC.
Yeah, for years before we saw an Intel-based Mac, Apple had OS X running on Intel x86 architecture.
Yep.
And you know, we've had rumors that Apple might be looking to design its own ARM processors for the Mac, right? Those have never been solid rumors, but
they come up every now and then.
I think it's probably because Apple is, whether or not they intend to release anything, they've got it. And it may not work well. As a matter of fact, I would say it probably doesn't work well. Or if it does work well, it takes so many ARM processors working in parallel. Because you know, Apple hasn't shipped an ARM processor that is desktop capable. There's a world of gappage between yes, I don't even know how to say this. There are all kinds of barriers to overcome to having a desktop class operating system run on ARM, because ARM is not designed to process data in the way that we use our desktop processors today, right? So this isn't a cut and dry thing, but Apple assuredly has some version of OS X running on ARM somewhere in Apple.
Yeah, of course they do.
And I would, yeah, I don't know. It's when I read Jean-Louis Gasset's piece on this, the first thing I thought about was that interview with Steve. And I would love this idea. I would love having my Mac in my pocket. And having it and letting it be the device that it needs to be for the purpose that I need it. And I would love to be able to, that I could take it with me. Well, of course, you know, how would you actually do that? So you've got your iPhone as your Mac. So how would that work with a laptop? I mean, it makes sense for a desktop, right? Because I've got a display sitting there, and then I've got my keyboard, and I just set it down, and it interfaces with everything. But then, like,
well, then the laptop, how am I working device,
in a coffee shop?
Okay, so you go to the coffee shop, and you have your laptop, your Mac laptop, and think of this like the Duo Dock, but in reverse.
Right.
So there's a slot in your laptop, and you pop your iPhone into that.
Or you just open it.
And it's just doing a wireless thing. So in that case, you leave your phone in your pocket. You open up the laptop, and the laptop is now the thin client going back to the phone.
Right. Of course, now you're serving all that data wireless. Yeah.
So clearly,
we're not really that. I mean, it really could be 10. It could even be 20 years from now.
You know, yeah, my guess is 10 at the earliest, just because of, you know, things change and new ideas and new technologies. I'm still waiting for my iPad to become a true knowledge navigator. That's my pipe dream right there.
Yeah.
You want your reverse toaster fridge iPhone.
Yeah.
I want my knowledge navigator.
Fair enough. I think I will get my reverse toaster fridge before you get your knowledge navigator.
It's likely. However, we're getting closer. Every iPad that comes out, every new version of iOS, the new iPads, we're getting closer to a knowledge navigator. Hey, a boy can dream.
A boy can quote unquote dream. Yes.
What do you mean, quote unquote dream? I can literally dream. That's more than quote unquote dream.
I think we're out of time.
Yeah, we're out of time. All right, I'm hitting the button. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
You can find us on Twitter @ContextMachine. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Didn't even ask her name.
It's because I already know.
Oh.